The following audiobooks contain AI-generated content and may contain errors. This audiobook narration presents Work After Titles, A Parent's Guide to College, Trades, and AI-Ready Paths. Topic Introduction. At a kitchen table in North America, the evening begins with two screens glowing side by side. On one, a college brochure promises a stable future, a campus life, and a path into in-demand work. On the other, a teenager watches a software tool draft an email, summarize a document, and build a rough answer in seconds. The parent looks back and forth between them and feels a familiar pressure tighten in the room. The old map still exists, but the terrain seems to be moving.
That is the starting point for this audiobook. Not panic, not hype, just the uneasy recognition that artificial intelligence is changing the shape of work, while families are still being asked to make long-range choices. A high school student is not choosing a single destiny. A family is choosing a direction, a first step, and a way to keep adjusting when the world changes again. That is a much more difficult task than picking a major from a brochure or a trade from a slogan. It is also a much more useful one.
The central idea here is simple enough to say and easy to overlook. A job title is not the same thing as the work inside it. A job is the label attached to a role. A task is the actual piece of work a person does within that role. Titles can look stable for years, while the tasks underneath them change quickly. A bookkeeper may still be called a bookkeeper, even as software takes over more of the routine checking. A technician may still be a technician, even as digital diagnostics reshape the day. A teacher, a designer, a nurse, a coordinator, a tradesperson, a sales worker, a junior analyst, a helper in a clinic or shop or office may all keep the same title, while the composition of the work shifts in small but important ways.
That distinction matters because families are usually asked to think in titles. College flyers, career websites, and well-meaning adults all tend to speak in labels. But employers do not hire labels. They hire people who can do specific things inside real workplaces, with real deadlines, real systems, real clients, and real consequences. That is why the book keeps returning to tasks, not just jobs. It is also why the future does not have to be guessed as one single outcome. It can be examined as a set of changing patterns.
A guidance counselor in one school may be helping a student compare programs while also watching local employers automate parts of entry-level work. A parent in another home may be trying to decide whether a degree, an apprenticeship, or a direct-to-work start makes the most sense. A teenager may feel torn between what sounds impressive, what sounds practical, and what actually fits the kind of work that feels possible. Meanwhile, a hiring manager may be scanning applications for proof of reliability, communication, and judgment, rather than just a title on paper. Each person sees a different piece of the same problem. This audiobook is meant to bring those pieces into one view.
The field is labor market planning, but the audience is not economists. It is parents of high school students who need a beginner-friendly way to think about education, work, and risk in an AI-shaped economy. North America is the lens, because that is where the practical decisions in this book are grounded. The discussion will move between the United States and Canada, not to blur the differences between them, but to show the common signal beneath the separate systems. The details vary by region, but the underlying question is the same. Which kinds of preparation are likely to remain useful, even when the tools change? Recent surveys already show how quickly that question is reaching ordinary households. Many parents are no longer asking whether AI matters in the abstract. They are asking how it changes their children's futures, their own planning, and the value of different paths after high school. That anxiety is understandable.
But anxiety alone cannot choose a direction. Families need a way to sort signal from noise, to understand what is changing first, and to recognize what changes more slowly than the headlines suggest.
One helpful definition will recur throughout the book. ROI means return on investment. In plain language, it asks what a path costs and what it is likely to return. The cost is not only tuition or fees. It also includes time, borrowing, and the opportunities a student gives up while training. The return is not only first-year pay. It also includes employability, flexibility, mobility, and the ability to recover if a first choice does not work out as planned. That is a practical way to think, because no family lives inside averages. Every family lives inside a budget, a region, a personality, and a set of trade-offs.
Another term will matter just as much: augmentation. That is what happens when a tool helps a person do work faster, more accurately, or at larger scale, without taking over the whole role. The opposite is substitution, when software takes over a task directly. In real workplaces, both can happen at the same time. That is why the future is rarely all or nothing. It is usually mixed, uneven, and more human than the headlines imply.
This audiobook does not ask parents to become forecasters. It asks them to become better readers of work, to notice which tasks are easy to standardize and which depend on judgment, to see where human trust still matters, to ask what skills travel from one employer to another, one industry to another, one region to another, to understand why a path that looks glamorous on the surface may be fragile underneath, and why a path that sounds ordinary may be quietly durable. The aim is not to crown one perfect route for every teenager. The aim is to build a decision process that still makes sense when the software improves, the labor market shifts, and a young person's strengths become clearer with time. That is why Chapter 1 begins with the labor market itself. Before choosing college, a trade, or a direct-to-work start, families need to understand the basic shape of demand, the difference between growth and security, and the way projection data should be read without pretending they are prophecy. From there, the book will move toward college value, employer hiring signals, common parental mistakes, a resilience framework, 3 AI scenarios, and a practical map of pathways that can be judged on evidence rather than hope alone. For now, the important thing is to pause in that kitchen, with the brochure on one screen and the software on the other, and notice the real question beneath both. It is not whether a single job title will survive unchanged. It is whether a young person can be prepared for a working life that will keep changing shape. The rest of this audiobook is built to answer that question with clarity, calm, and a way forward. End of introduction. A parent can open one screen and see a college brochure promising stability, then open another and watch software handle pieces of office work in seconds. That contrast makes the future feel like a moving target. The useful correction is simple. Artificial intelligence changes tasks faster than it changes job titles. So the goal is not to pick one winning label for a teenager and hope it holds. The goal is to build a decision process that stays useful as tools improve, employers revise expectations, and a young person's strengths become clearer with time. That is why the labor market is the right starting point. Not because official forecasts can tell a family exactly what one child will do at age 30, but because they help separate direction from noise. They show where demand is building, where routine work is under pressure, and where replacement hiring can keep doors open even when a field is not expanding quickly. For parents, that is the kind of certainty that matters. In a 2025 survey reported by Intuit Credit Karma and Harris Poll, 81% of United States parents of children from kindergarten through 11th grade said AI had changed how they think about their children's career futures.
89% said they were already adjusting how they prepare across academics, skills, and finances. And 78% said they had changed their own financial plans. In related findings from the same research, 86% agreed that families need a new playbook for preparing children for work in an AI-shaped economy. A separate 2025 survey from Penn Foster, based on more than 500 United States parents of high school students, pointed in the same direction. 54% said AI was causing them to rethink post-secondary paths. 55% said they felt anxious about whether their children would be ready for the job market.
48% said they felt more confident in non-degree options, such as apprenticeships. A 2025 survey from Zadie reported even higher levels of concern. 97% of parents said they feared AI would disrupt their child's job prospects over the next decade, and 71% said they planned to be heavily involved in career decisions. The survey methods are not identical, so the numbers are not interchangeable, but the direction is consistent. Parents are not simply curious about AI. Many are already changing plans.
That concern becomes easier to manage once the basic unit of change is named correctly. A job is a label used by employers, schools, and labor statistics. A task is the actual piece of work inside that label. The title stays broad. The tasks are specific. An accounting role can include reconciling records, checking for anomalies, writing emails, explaining issues to a manager, and learning a company's software. A healthcare role can include documentation, equipment setup, patient communication, safety checks, and coordination with other staff. When new software enters the picture, it usually does not replace the whole job at once. It reaches into the bundle and changes parts of it. That is why tasks matter more than titles when families try to understand risk and opportunity.
Automation and AI tend to target work that is repetitive, rules-based, easy to standardize, or easy to convert into digital inputs and outputs. They are less direct with work that depends on trust, physical variability, tacit judgment, exception handling, or responsibility for outcomes in messy, real settings. Even then, the result is often mixed. Some tasks disappear. Some speed up. Some become more important because the person now has to supervise a tool, verify its output, or handle cases the tool cannot manage well. One distinction helps here. Task substitution happens when software takes over a task a person used to do directly. Task augmentation happens when software helps a person do that task faster, more accurately, or at greater scale. Both can exist inside the same job title. A customer support worker may use AI to draft a response, which is augmentation, while call summarization becomes automated, which is substitution. A technician may rely on diagnostic software to narrow likely causes, which is augmentation, while routine logging becomes mostly automated, which is substitution. The title stays the same. The composition of the day changes. This pattern explains why occupations often move more slowly than public conversation suggests. Employers hire whole people into real operating environments, not isolated tasks floating on their own. A role continues to exist if the remaining work still requires judgment, coordination, physical presence, accountability, or relationship management. Human demand persists for practical reasons. Workplaces have safety rules, customer expectations, legal exposure, uneven data quality, unusual cases, and constant variation. A school, a hospital floor, a construction site, a warehouse dock, a family business, or a municipal office contains far more complexity than a polished software demonstration. That is also why labor markets can absorb new tools without turning overnight into mass removal of job titles. A role can shrink in one set of tasks and become more valuable in another. In many occupations, the human part shifts upward. Less time goes to routine formatting, lookup, or basic drafting. More time goes to prioritizing,
checking, explaining, coordinating, persuading, troubleshooting, and dealing with exceptions. That does not make every occupation equally secure. It does mean the practical question for planning is usually not whether a job disappears in one blow. It is which tasks inside a pathway are easiest to automate, and which tasks become more valuable when automation spreads.
For a North American baseline, the most detailed public occupational projections come from the United States. On September 4, 2024, the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics updated its employment projections and occupational outlook materials for the period from 2024 through 2034. Statistics Canada also published a labor market outlook on August 30, 2024, extending through 2033. The systems are different, so the tables are not interchangeable, but they point in related directions. Health-related work remains structurally important as populations age. Skilled trades retain demand because physical systems still need installation, maintenance, and repair. Routine office work faces more pressure, where employers can standardize and digitize tasks. The United States projections are especially useful because they show change across broad occupational groups, not just a short list of fashionable jobs.
According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics projections, healthcare support occupations are among the stronger growth areas over the period. Construction and extraction also grows, which is a reminder that adaptation is not only a white-collar story. Within that construction group, electricians are projected to grow by about 6% from 2024 through 2034. On the other side, office and administrative support is projected to decline overall, and production occupations are also expected to trend downward. The point is not that one trade is safe and one office role is not. The point is that pressure shows up first in tasks, then more gradually in occupation totals. Statistics Canada points in a similar direction. Its August 2024 outlook describes continued demand in skilled trades through 2033.
Families do not need perfectly matched tables from both countries to see the common signal. Physical infrastructure, maintenance, care work, and technology-enabled problem-solving remain economically necessary. Routine administrative work remains more exposed, where employers can standardize and digitize it. Even so, growth and decline need careful interpretation. When an occupational group is projected to grow, that is a statement about employment levels, or shares, over a period under stated assumptions. It is not a promise for any individual teenager in any specific town. A growing field can still be hard to enter in a weak local market, during a recession, or without the right preparation. A declining field can still offer stable work for years in a region where employers need continuity, experienced workers retire, or remaining tasks are business critical.
Projections also do not mean openings behave like a simple door that opens only when a field grows. Labor markets do not work that way. Employers hire when a field grows, but they also hire when workers retire, move into management, switch occupations, reduce hours, or leave the labor force. In official projection systems, many openings come from replacement needs rather than net new jobs. That is one reason a broad category can change slowly in headcount and still produce meaningful opportunity. If office and administrative support contracts overall, roles inside it will still need backfilling for years. If construction grows only moderately, it can still mean a steady stream of hiring because projects continue and skilled workers age out.
That logic supports a planning horizon that reaches toward 2035, even when most official tables stop earlier. Public agencies have to choose a published endpoint. The current United States federal projections run through 2034. Statistics Canada's recent outlook runs through 2033. Family planning does not have to stop at the edge of a spreadsheet. The sensible move is to use official projections as directional evidence up to their stated horizon, then extend thinking into 2035 with scenario planning rather than false precision.
The records tell families where the road appears to be bending. Scenario planning helps people think about the stretch beyond the signpost. That discipline matters because every projection rests on assumptions that can shift. Productivity trends matter because if software lets each worker produce more, some employers may need fewer workers for certain tasks. Demographic change matters because aging populations can raise demand in healthcare, support services, housing, and maintenance. Economic cycles matter because even strong long-run fields can slow during downturns, and weaker long-run fields can hire during expansions. Business investment, migration, policy, energy costs, and interest rates can shape details too. A projection is not a prophecy. It is a structured estimate built on visible assumptions.
For families, the practical takeaway is not to become amateur forecasters. It is to move one level deeper than the title and ask which kinds of tasks are likely to keep mattering if conditions change. Tasks tied to human trust, coordination across people, physical troubleshooting, safety, judgment under uncertainty, customer interpretation, and real-world exception handling usually travel better than tasks that are repetitive, neatly digital, and easy to standardize. The same is true of learning capacity itself. If a pathway teaches a teenager how to diagnose problems, communicate clearly, document accurately, and adapt to new tools, that pathway is more resilient, even when the software inside the work keeps changing.
College enters the conversation next, and families often ask whether it is worth it in general. That question is too blunt. Return on investment, or ROI, is a practical trade-off among cost, time, flexibility, and risk. Direct costs include tuition, fees, books, housing, transportation, and the expenses that sit around formal tuition. Indirect costs matter too. Time spent in school is time not spent earning full-time wages, building seniority, or testing fit in the labor market. This is general information, not individualized financial advice. A brief suitability note is useful here. Before taking on debt-based options, families can consult official aid and tuition information and review their own circumstances with qualified counselors because eligibility and costs vary widely.
Once the cost side is clear, the benefit side has to be clear too. The value of college is not captured by first-year income alone. A credential can improve employability by opening screening gates that would otherwise stay closed. It can improve mobility by making it easier to change employers, regions, or industries later. It can reduce mismatch risk if the program builds skills employers actually use. It can also fall short on those measures if the student does not finish, if the curriculum is weakly connected to available work, or if the credential does not signal much value in hiring. That is why averages need careful handling.
In an October 15, 2024 update, analyses from Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce continued to report a large average lifetime earnings premium for people with bachelor's degrees, roughly $1 million over a working life. That matters because it shows college can still pay off for many graduates on average. But the phrase "on average" carries substantial weight. Outcomes vary by major, by degree level, by credential specificity, by local demand, by whether the student finishes, and by what the student can actually do at graduation. A broad average does not erase the spread underneath it.
Field matters because labor markets reward different kinds of preparation differently. Degrees tied to licensed professions or to clearly demanded technical and analytical work often follow one payoff pattern. Broader degrees can still be valuable, but their return depends more heavily on whether the student pairs coursework with experience, communication, and visible evidence of competence. Shorter credentials can have attractive returns when they connect tightly to employer demand and lead into work quickly. Graduate degrees can be strong investments where advanced specialization is truly required, but they also add cost, time, and outcome risk.
The useful question is not whether more education is always better. It is whether a given credential buys durable capability and realistic opportunity at a cost the family can carry.
Institution type matters for the same reason. In the United States, public and private institutions can come with very different prices, aid structures, and debt profiles. In Canada, the price structure is different, but living costs, program fit, and time to completion still matter a great deal. Community college can improve ROI when it lowers the cost of general education, supports early momentum, and leads cleanly into a completed credential or direct employment. A four-year institution can be worth the cost when it offers strong completion, relevant work experiences, and a recognized route into demand-rich fields. Neither label guarantees value on its own.
Transfer pathways deserve special attention because they can improve ROI or quietly damage it. A community college to university route can be financially powerful if credits transfer cleanly, advising is strong, and the student completes on time. The same route can lose much of its advantage if credits do not count, if required courses are missed, or if time to degree stretches. That is why families should focus on time to degree whenever an option sounds attractive. Return depends not only on price, but on how long the program takes and how reliably students emerge with a usable credential.
Completion rate belongs in the same conversation. Parents are often shown brochures, rankings, and salary snapshots. Those matter far less than many families assume if too many students do not finish. Completion rate is part of the investment itself. A pathway with strong outcomes for completers can still be a weak bet if completion is poor and the typical student takes much longer than advertised. Every extra semester adds direct cost, increases living expenses, delays earnings, and can increase borrowing. Earnings also have a time shape. Early earnings and longer-run earnings are not the same thing. Some pathways start modestly and rise as skill deepens, job matching improves, and credentials accumulate. Others produce decent early pay, but flatten because advancement is narrow, or because the initial role doesn't build much that travels well. Parents who judge too quickly can miss both patterns.
Debt has to be weighed against repayment capacity, not just against ambition. Data from the Federal Reserve in 2025 put outstanding United States student loan balances at roughly $1.7 trillion. That figure does not mean all borrowing is unwise. It does mean financing cannot be treated as an afterthought. The same debt amount carries different risk depending on expected early career earnings, the stability of entry-level employment, whether the student is likely to complete, and whether the credential is actually needed for access to the field. Uncertainty matters here. When outcomes are highly variable, debt becomes riskier, even when the average result looks acceptable on paper.
A beginner-friendly comparison method can stay simple and still be rigorous. Start with employment outcomes, using official records or institution-reported outcomes where those are available, and ask what graduates or completers typically do next. Then look at completion rate, because the value of an option depends on how often students reach the finish line. Add time to degree, because calendar time changes both cost and earnings. Finally, compare likely debt burden with realistic repayment capacity in the early years after school. If one option looks prestigious but is weak on completion, slow on time to degree, or heavy on borrowing relative to likely earnings, the advertised upside may be thinner than it appears. If another option looks less glamorous but is stronger on completion, lower in cost, and clearer on work outcomes, its return may be better. Used this way, college becomes easier to see clearly.
It is not a referendum on status, and it is not a guaranteed ticket. It is one possible package of skills, signals, networks, and access to work.
In an AI-shaped economy, the strongest educational investment is rarely the one that promises a perfect career label. it is the one that leaves a young person more capable, more legible to employers, and better able to adapt when the label changes. Next, the focus turns to the skills employers are rewarding right now, and which of those skills tend to keep their value as the tools change. United States Department of Labor apprenticeship data, released in February 2025, show more than 600,000 active apprentices in the United States, about one-fifth more than in 2021. That kind of data set is useful because it ties learning to supervised work, documented standards, and progress in responsibility. It also helps translate a big idea into something parents can evaluate. Employers hire for what people can do inside real workflows.
Once the conversation moves from school price to hiring reality, the picture gets sharper. Employers are not hiring majors, badges, or certificates in the abstract. They hire for work that has to be done inside real workflows, with real deadlines, real customers, real compliance rules, and real mistakes to catch. That is why the most resilient skills are usually not the flashiest labels in a course catalog. Across recent analyses of job postings, employer surveys, and workplace learning reporting, one pattern shows up again and again. Software names change quickly. The surrounding capabilities change more slowly. Employers want people who can use changing tools and still deliver accurate, dependable results.
That distinction matters because narrow technical labels can age fast. A platform badge can help in screening, especially when a team needs someone who can begin with the current software stack. But labels tied tightly to one vendor, one interface, or one version lose value when firms change systems, combine teams, or automate the easiest parts of a workflow. The underlying capability usually lasts longer. Someone who can interpret a dashboard, write a clear client update, document a process, catch an error, and escalate the right problem remains useful, even when the menu changes.
The recurring hiring categories are fairly concrete. They are abilities that let a person work effectively with machines, with other people, and with the constraints of an actual organization. Communication sits near the top because work rarely arrives as a perfect instruction. Someone clarifies the goal, asks follow-up questions, explains a risk, and translates output into language another person can use. When AI drafts part of the work, communication often matters more, not less. The draft still has to be interpreted, corrected, and delivered in a form the audience can trust.
Problem solving also matters, but employers usually mean something more specific than abstract cleverness. They mean figuring out why an order is late, why an estimate is off, why a patient record is incomplete, why a customer keeps calling back, or why a part fails inspection. Domain knowledge gives that problem-solving shape. In many workplaces, training someone on software is easier than building judgment about what counts as a real problem in accounting, logistics, healthcare, construction, manufacturing, or sales. That is one reason domain knowledge keeps its value as AI improves. The tool can generate possibilities. The worker still has to decide which possibility fits the rules, risks, and standards of that field.
Data literacy is the next category, and it reaches far beyond advanced programming. In many roles, employers are not asking for software engineers. They are asking for people who can read a table, understand a chart, spot an outlier, notice missing information, compare this week with last week, and avoid drawing conclusions from weak evidence. A sales coordinator may need to interpret pipeline numbers. A medical office worker may need to catch missing fields in an electronic health record. A technician may need to read sensor output and service history. An operations assistant may need to clean a spreadsheet before a manager can trust it. None of that requires deep coding. All of it requires data literacy.
That is also why families should be careful not to define digital skill too narrowly. A large share of useful data work happens in spreadsheets, dashboards, ticketing systems,
estimating tools, scheduling platforms, and customer relationship management systems. The valuable question is not whether a teenager already knows every current platform. It is whether the teenager can learn a system, keep information clean, interpret what the numbers mean, and recognize when the data is not strong enough to support a decision.
Process thinking often matters just as much, even when employers do not always label it that way. Work happens inside systems, made of steps, handoffs, approvals, exceptions, and quality checks. The employee who sees only one isolated task is easier to replace. The employee who understands where that task sits in the larger process is harder to replace. That person notices bottlenecks, duplicated effort, weak documentation, and the point where a bad input will create a costly downstream error. As AI tools get inserted into more workflows, process thinking becomes more valuable because someone has to decide where the tool belongs, when its output can be trusted, and when a case needs human review.
Teamwork and client or customer orientation belong in the same cluster. Many teenagers hear that a stable future depends mostly on technical skill, and they assume interpersonal skill is secondary. In practice, employers hire whole people into teams. They need someone who can receive feedback without shutting down, hand work off clearly, listen for what a customer actually means rather than only what was said literally, and protect relationships when a process goes wrong. AI can summarize a call. It does not own the relationship after a shipment is delayed, a claim is denied, or a patient is confused.
Then there is professional reliability, which may be the least glamorous label and one of the most valuable categories. Reliability shows up in hiring and in performance reviews in concrete ways. It means meeting timelines. It means documenting work so another person can follow it. It means following quality and safety procedures even when nobody is hovering nearby. It means showing up prepared, closing loops, and not creating avoidable uncertainty for the next person in the chain. Reliable employees reduce rework, delays, and safety risk, so the trait keeps its value even when the tools around it change.
This is where tool-adjacent hiring becomes easier to understand. Employers often hire for fluency with the software already inside a workflow, plus judgment about what to do with the output that software produces. A firm may ask for familiarity with the current accounting package, the current customer relationship management system, the active electronic health record, the project board already used by the team, or the estimating software in the shop. That request is real. Employers hire into today's workflow, not a theoretical future one. But the more durable question sits beside it. Can the person judge what to do with AI output once it appears inside that workflow? Can the person use it, revise it, reject it, or escalate it? AI can sound confident while being wrong. In a workplace, the value often lies in spotting that quickly.
In some fields, that judgment is tested through work samples, portfolios, or skill assessments, rather than course titles alone.
If a program or apprenticeship is being compared, a useful starting question is what a trainee can actually produce halfway through and by the end. That work product might be a repair log, a spreadsheet analysis, a customer memo, a quality checklist, a portfolio piece, or a supervised service task. If a program cannot show the kind of work learners do, it is hard to know what employers are really buying. The next question is how feedback is delivered. Strong training does not merely expose students to material and certify attendance. It shows learners what good work looks like, compares their output to that standard, and requires revision. A useful program can usually explain who gives feedback, how often it happens, what standard is used, and whether learners improve over time rather than clearing a single checkpoint.
A third question is how skills are assessed across time. Course completion alone is a weak signal. Families need stronger evidence. Are there observed demonstrations of skill, supervisor evaluations, repeat assessments, employer-facing projects, or work-based learning components? Are students using current tools and real documentation practices, or are they mostly collecting slides and quiz scores? A resilient pathway builds task capability that can survive a software update. A weaker pathway may produce a certificate with little proof of performance.
The apprenticeship data help illustrate the difference at scale. The strongest apprenticeship and work-based programs do not merely say that a learner sat through content. They connect learning to supervised work, documented standards, and measurable progress. They can show what the learner did, how the learner improved, and what level of responsibility the learner can handle safely.
Once hiring is viewed through that lens, several common parental mistakes become easier to spot. Most are not signs of bad judgment. They are the kinds of mistakes people make when the future feels uncertain and the signals are noisy. Under pressure, families often grab the clearest signal and treat it as the whole story. One common error is over-indexing on a single hot career title. When headlines celebrate one field and warn against another, families naturally want to move fast. The better rule is to prioritize task types and skill portability. Ask what kinds of work a teenager would actually be doing, which tasks travel across industries, and which tasks would still matter if software changes.
A second error is confusing AI adoption with full job replacement. A business may roll out AI tools for drafting, search, scheduling, coding assistance, customer support, image creation, or quality control. That can matter for entry requirements, but it does not automatically mean the whole occupation disappears. The better rule is to plan for augmentation and changing workflows before assuming disappearance. In many cases, entry tasks change first. Routine drafting may shrink. Verification, exception handling, client explanation, cross-team coordination, and tool supervision may grow. That shift can make some pathways more competitive and some entry routes narrower, but it is not the same as total removal.
A third error is assuming internships always convert into long-term offers. There is no sound basis for treating conversion as automatic. Conversion depends on hiring budgets, labor market conditions, supervisor capacity, the internship structure, and whether the intern produced evidence of useful work. The better rule is to treat an internship as two assets that still need to be verified. One is skill evidence. The other is network value. Before the internship ends, look for signs of both: what the student actually produced, what feedback was given, and whether there is a reference, a portfolio piece, stronger understanding of the field, or a clearer next step if a full-time offer does not appear.
A fourth error is judging return on investment by early earnings alone. Early pay matters. It affects debt pressure, independence, and family stress. But early pay is not the whole return. Some pathways start high and flatten because advancement is narrow or because the early role builds little that travels well. Others start more modestly and rise as competence deepens, licensing is completed, or the worker moves into a better match. The better rule is to track time to competence, completion odds, and longer-run employability risk alongside starting pay. A pathway that gets someone productive quickly, helps that person finish, and builds skills that still matter after a tool shift can outperform a path that looks strong only in the first year.
A fifth error sits in the gap between credentials and work. Families often assume that related majors automatically lead to related outcomes. Sometimes they do. Often they do not. A major title tells employers what subject a student studied. It does not tell employers what level of practice the student reached. The same pattern can apply to many certificates. The more resilient rule is to look for evidence of portfolio work, internships, labs, supervised practice, part-time work, or other real task performance. If two students complete similar coursework, the one who can show finished work, documented feedback, and applied experience is usually easier to hire.
These corrected rules keep returning to the same themes:
adaptability matters because tools will change, transferability matters because employers and industries will change, and experience matters because hiring decisions are made under uncertainty, and visible proof reduces that uncertainty. Recheck points matter because no family gets the whole decision right on the first try. That is the foundation for a framework that can be reused across college, trades, and direct-to-work options. Start with adaptability. Does the pathway teach only a narrow procedure, or does it also teach diagnosis, documentation, communication, and the ability to learn adjacent tools? A narrow procedure can still be useful for fast entry. The more a pathway teaches how to learn new tools and handle exceptions, the more adaptable it is.
Then look at transferability across employers and industries. A training path is stronger when its core work travels. Data interpretation, client communication, project coordination, safety discipline, equipment troubleshooting, sales process awareness, and clean documentation move better than a skill tied only to one employer's private system. Transferability gives a teenager room to recover from a layoff, a relocation, or a disappointing first choice. Next, consider how quickly the technical layer is likely to age. Skill obsolescence risk rises when value sits almost entirely in one interface, one narrow workflow, or one version-specific credential. Risk falls when the learner also understands the process, the standards, the customer need, and the common failure points.
A strong path also includes real work experience early enough to matter. Work experience is not just a line on an application. It is where a learner finds out whether classroom success transfers into pace, accountability, teamwork, and production. A pathway becomes much stronger when it includes supervised projects, apprenticeships, co-ops, clinical hours, internships, or paid work tied to the actual field. Evidence of performance changes how employers read a young candidate. Geographic and economic resilience matter too. Some pathways travel well across regions. Others depend heavily on one local employer base, one licensing system, or one narrow economic cycle. Families do not need to reject every local path because of that. They do need to understand the trade-off. A skill set that can work in more than one region and survive more than one business cycle is usually more resilient.
The last question is whether the path matches the teen's realistic learning curve. Parents naturally want to aim high. A plan works only if the teen can progress through training, tolerate the daily tasks, and keep building competence. Mapping strengths to task types can be more useful than forcing a single job title early. Instead of asking what the teenager should become at age 17, ask which recurring task patterns fit best right now. Troubleshooting physical systems, organizing information, persuading and serving customers, building visual or written products, coordinating moving pieces, or caring for people in structured settings. Titles can come later.
To put the framework to work, gather evidence from programs and employers in concrete forms. Look at work products. Look at assessments. Look at whether learners revise work after feedback. Look at whether a program has current industry connections, work-based learning, or hiring pipelines that can be described clearly. Then, compare that evidence with hiring signals in the local or regional market. If a pathway sounds modern but cannot show what learners can do, it deserves skepticism. If another pathway sounds less glamorous but can show durable skill development, strong supervision, and employer recognition, it deserves respect.
Apply the same evidence habit to employers, not just schools. Job postings can reveal task expectations. Employer conversations can clarify whether entry workers are expected to bring software fluency, safety training, documentation habits, customer communication, or portfolio evidence. Licensing requirements and apprenticeship standards can show where formal thresholds matter. None of that guarantees an outcome,
it makes the decision easier to judge before committing.
Recheck points keep the framework honest over time. A time-based recheck point might come at the end of each semester, after a summer job, or after the first year of a program. An evidence-based recheck point appears when the teen is not producing stronger work samples, is struggling with a gating skill, is losing motivation because daily tasks do not fit, or discovers that local hiring expects something the program does not provide. An adjustment at that point is not failure. It is the system working as intended. Uncertainty has to be stated plainly. AI disruption is probabilistic and multi-path, not guaranteed for any single career on any single date. Firms adopt at different speeds. Regions vary. Regulations vary. Customers vary. Many occupations will see faster automation of routine tasks, heavier augmentation in other parts, and combinations in between. The planning goal is not to outguess the entire economy. It is to choose paths that remain useful across several plausible versions of it. With this scorecard in hand, the next step is scenario planning, using multiple AI futures to stress test the same underlying decision criteria before committing to a single path.
The framework now needs a stress test. Scenario planning helps because it does not pretend that one future has already won. In 2025 parent surveys in the United States, reported by Intuit Credit Karma and Harris Poll, Penn Foster, and Zetti, many families said AI was already affecting how they think about their children's career options. Even so, no family can forecast the exact shape of work in 2035, and no family needs to. The sturdier question is simpler. If several AI futures remain plausible, which education and training choices still look strong across them? The method only works if the scenarios are treated as equal weight tools for comparison. In every case, families ask the same set of questions. What changes in tasks and workflows? Which role patterns become more or less common? And what parents and teens should emphasize so the plan still makes sense if conditions shift?
Start with a conservative disruption scenario. In this version, task automation moves forward, but unevenly. Employers use AI tools, yet adoption stays patchy because data quality can be inconsistent, compliance rules matter, customers still expect accountability, and managers in higher-stakes settings do not hand final judgment to a system they do not fully trust. The main change is augmentation. AI helps people draft, search, summarize, estimate, compare, and check, while humans still carry responsibility for quality, exceptions, customer communication, safety, and sign-off. In that world, the roles that grow are not necessarily new titles. They are familiar roles with heavier tool use inside them. A technician reads digital diagnostics more often. A junior analyst starts with an automated report, then has to explain what it means and where it may mislead.
A designer uses AI to generate options, then edits toward a client need. A software developer uses model-assisted tools, but still has to understand architecture, testing, and security. What loses value is not human work itself. It is rote production with little judgment behind it.
For parents and teens, the conservative scenario favors balance. A teenager does not need to chase every new platform. The more durable goal is comfort with tools, paired with discipline about standards. Can the student check an output against a requirement? Can the student explain why a result is wrong? Can the student improve a workflow without losing accountability for the final product? Those questions matter more than whether a young person can prompt a tool into producing something that looks finished.
In science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM, a conservative disruption path changes what counts as useful entry-level strength. Model-assisted development can make routine coding faster, but it does not remove the need to frame a problem, define constraints, design a system,
test assumptions, and verify results. A student who only learns to produce small fragments on command becomes more exposed as tools improve. A student who learns debugging, documentation, testing, design logic, and constraint-based problem solving becomes better positioned. The tool can suggest the worker still has to know what would fail in the real system, what violates a requirement, and what cannot be trusted without checking. In business work, routine reporting becomes easier to automate. Dashboards can update faster. AI can draft summaries, flag anomalies, and assemble first-pass memos. The human value shifts toward interpretation and accountability. Someone still has to explain whether a sales drop reflects weak demand, bad data entry, a seasonal pattern, or a change in how the metric was captured. Someone still has to tell a manager what a report can support as a decision and what it cannot support. In the trades, AI-enabled tools tend to show up as instrumentation, diagnostics, estimating software, digital documentation, and safety systems. The hands-on workflow remains because buildings, vehicles, plumbing, electrical systems, heating systems, equipment, and industrial machinery still exist in physical space. The emphasis shifts, though. A trainee who can troubleshoot, read equipment signals, document work, follow safety rules, and comply with code is more resilient than one who only memorizes a narrow procedure. The tool may narrow the search for a fault. The worker still has to enter the site, judge actual conditions, and do the work safely. In creative work, the conservative scenario speeds up drafting and iteration. AI can help generate concepts, outlines, images, layouts, edits, and variations. That changes the production process, but it does not settle quality. Editing judgment becomes more important because more material can be produced more quickly. Rights management can also become more central. Creative workers and teams need to track what sources were used, what permissions apply, what a client is allowed to publish, and whether the final piece meets the intended standard. In this version of the future, resilience belongs to the person who can guide the tool, protect quality, and keep a clean record of how the work was made. Now move to a moderate disruption scenario. Here, adoption spreads faster across ordinary workplaces, not only technology teams or early experiments. Many routinized junior tasks are the ones employers can automate, standardize, or bundle into software first. The labor market still needs people, but the first rung becomes more competitive. Candidates are asked to prove skill earlier, with stronger evidence than a course title or a general claim of interest. In this scenario, the change hits the entry point. Drafting, lookup, basic analysis, scheduling, formatting, routine customer responses, and first-pass documentation become more automated across many organizations. That does not erase entire fields. It changes how beginners earn trust. The older route often let a junior worker do repetitive work while gradually learning the larger process. The moderate scenario compresses that route. Employers may expect a beginner to arrive able to supervise tools, check outputs, communicate clearly, and document decisions from the start. The role pattern follows. Jobs built around simple task execution become less common or harder to enter. Roles that coordinate systems, verify outputs, serve customers, maintain equipment, manage projects, and translate information across teams become more valuable. Work samples, assessments, supervised experience, and portfolios carry more weight. That direction shows up in employer expectations across job posting analysis and employer surveys, which increasingly emphasize demonstrated capability rather than course completion alone. A portfolio does not have to mean an artistic website. It can mean verified artifacts, such as a repaired component documented correctly, a data analysis with notes, a tested program, a client memo, a lab report, a design iteration, or a supervisor-reviewed project. For families, the preparation standard changes. it is no longer enough for a teenager to say that they studied something. The stronger claim is what they produced, what standard they used, what feedback they received, and how their work improved. That evidence reduces uncertainty for employers. It also helps families see whether a pathway builds real capacity or mainly moves a student through content. In STEM fields, automated assistance becomes common inside teams. Entry-level candidates may need to show problem-solving artifacts before they get the chance to learn on the job. Those artifacts can include projects that reveal how a student defined constraints, tested a solution, handled failure, and explained trade-offs. Rate coding or formula use becomes a weaker signal in this scenario. Understanding constraints matters more because AI can produce plausible answers that still violate a requirement, ignore a safety condition, or fail under real operating conditions. In business roles, automation changes entry screening. A company that once hired a junior employee to build basic reports may now expect that person to coordinate tools, clean data, interpret exceptions, and communicate with stakeholders. Portfolios and validated competencies matter more for roles between systems and decisions. A business portfolio might include a spreadsheet model, a process map, a customer analysis, a project plan, or a written recommendation grounded in evidence. The point is not polish for its own sake. The point is proof that the candidate can turn information into responsible action.
In the trades, tool-assisted diagnostics become more common and more embedded in ordinary work. Trainees may use digital instruments, manufacturer software, building controls, or service platforms that record what was done. That raises the value of safety reasoning and documentation. A worker has to validate the outcome, not just follow a screen. If a system reports one likely cause, the trainee still has to judge whether that diagnosis fits the physical evidence, whether the repair meets code, and whether the equipment is safe to return to service. The work remains hands-on, but the evidence trail grows in importance. In creative fields, the moderate scenario accelerates production cycles. More drafts can be generated in less time, so clients and teams may expect faster iteration. The more competitive roles often manage coherence. Someone still has to keep style consistent, track versions, interpret client requirements, and ensure the final product is usable rather than merely abundant. Creative resilience grows from taste, revision discipline, rights awareness, and the ability to manage a process that now produces more options than any team can use well. Then comes the high disruption scenario. This is not a forecast. It is the tougher stress test. It asks, what happens if AI reconfigures entry pathways more widely, and if job requirements become more volatile? In this version, employers revise workflows quickly. Some roles shrink, some split, some combine tasks that used to sit in separate positions. Education and training providers respond, but not at the same pace. Credentials become more flexible because workers need to refresh proof of skill more often. AI tools do not merely assist isolated tasks. They become part of the default workflow in many offices, labs, shops, studios, and service organizations. The human worker is often responsible for selecting tools, validating outputs, handling exceptions, communicating with affected people, and protecting safety or quality. The path into work becomes less predictable. A teenager may enter through a certificate, an apprenticeship, a co-op placement, a direct employer program, a portfolio, a degree, or some mix over time. Role patterns become more fluid in this scenario. Positions built around predictable entry-level production become less common. Roles that require rapid learning, domain switching, tool comparison, compliance awareness, and human accountability become more important. Requirements may change faster than families expect. A credential that was enough 2 years earlier may need a refresh. A software tool that once stood out may become ordinary.
The resilient worker is not the person who knows everything. It is the person who can learn the next layer quickly and prove that learning through work. For parents and teens, a high disruption world calls for broad foundations and visible adaptability. Strong reading, writing, mathematics, data sense, technical curiosity, and communication become protective because they make later reskilling easier. Flexible credentials matter when they are credible and tied to real assessment. Shorter certificates, licensing updates, employer-recognized training, supervised projects, and portfolio evidence can help if they demonstrate capability. The danger is collecting weak badges that do not change what the team can actually do. In STEM, workflows may reconfigure quickly under high disruption. A team may change how it writes code, tests systems, documents design, manages data, or uses simulation. Continuous learning becomes central, but it cannot stay vague. A resilient STEM pathway teaches transferable engineering problem solving. That means identifying constraints, reasoning from evidence, testing under uncertainty, documenting decisions, and communicating trade-offs. Those habits survive a tool change better than narrow familiarity with one interface. In business, task volatility rises. A candidate may need to move between analytical tools, customer systems, operations platforms, and changing business domains. People who hold up best can show transferable skill across contexts. That can mean evidence of analyzing data in one setting, mapping a process in another, and explaining a decision to a non-technical audience in a third. The tool stack changes, but the underlying business skill still centers on turning messy information into accountable action. In the trades, high disruption does not mean physical work disappears. It means equipment, diagnostics, control systems, and documentation practices update more often. Workers may need faster credential refresh and stronger safety competency across changing tool sets. Durable strength is not manual skill alone. It is the combination of manual skill, diagnostic judgment, documentation, code awareness, and disciplined learning. A worker who can safely adapt to new equipment is more resilient than someone trained only on yesterday's procedure. In creative work, quality expectations and rights workflows may change quickly. Clients may expect rapid production, but also clearer sourcing, stronger licensing confidence, consistent brand control, and proof that the worker can manage tools responsibly. Adaptability becomes decisive when style demands shift, platforms change, and legal or contractual requirements evolve. In this scenario, a creative portfolio needs to show not only finished pieces, but production judgment too. How versions were managed, how sources were handled, how quality was controlled, how the work met a defined purpose. Across all three scenarios, one theme keeps returning. The speed of AI adoption changes the pressure on entry pathways, but the resilience criteria stay recognizable. Judgment travels. Process understanding travels. Communication travels. Safety discipline travels. Data literacy travels. Evidence of real work travels. A plan that builds those qualities can bend under different futures without breaking at the first surprise. With scenario planning complete, the next move is to map pathways rather than rank them by prestige. College, trades, and direct-to-work options can each be strong, and each can be weak. Recent parent survey results already show growing openness to apprenticeships and other non-degree routes, but the label alone cannot decide the outcome. The pathway design does. A resilient college path begins with foundations. The student is not only collecting courses, the student is building abilities that support later movement across employers and roles, including writing, quantitative reasoning, data interpretation, scientific or technical literacy where relevant, communication, and disciplined problem solving. A degree tends to help most when it opens screening gates and leaves the graduate able to do visible work. It becomes weaker when it is expensive, slow, disconnected from practice, or vague about what a graduate can actually produce.
Flexible electives can matter because the labor market changes faster than most catalogs. A student in a broad major can increase resilience by adding statistics, computing, writing-intensive work, business fundamentals, design, health systems, logistics, or another applied layer that fits the target field. A technical student can benefit from communication, ethics, project management, or domain electives that make technical skill usable inside organizations. Flexibility is not drift. It is adjacent strength.
Internships, co-op placements, labs, clinics, studios, capstones, and employer projects matter most when they produce work evidence. A college experience becomes stronger when students leave with artifacts they can show, discuss, revise, and defend. That evidence might be a research poster, tested code, a design prototype, a policy memo, a business analysis, a lab technique, a supervised client project, or a field placement evaluation. The point is simple. The work should connect to standards beyond attendance.
Career services should be judged by connection, not slogans. A resilient college does more than host a general job fair. It helps students understand employer expectations, find internships, prepare work samples, practice interviews, connect with alumni or local employers, and identify the skills that matter in the region where they want to work. When evaluating a program, families can ask what students actually produce, how often they receive feedback, who evaluates the work, what share complete on time, which employers hire from the program, and what graduates do after 1 year, and again several years later when reliable outcome records exist.
The trades pathway has a different structure, but many of the same strengths. Apprenticeship and credential routes combine learning with supervised work. In the United States, federal apprenticeship data released in late February 2025 reported more than 600,000 active apprentices, which underscores that work-based training is a major training system with standards, supervision, progression in responsibility, and pay while learning. In both the United States and Canada, trade pathways usually mix classroom instruction, on-the-job training, exams, safety requirements, and in some fields, licensing. Details vary by state, province, trade, and employer, but the resilience comes from the structure. A trainee learns by doing, receives correction from experienced workers, and gradually builds diagnostic judgment.
That judgment takes time because real equipment, buildings, weather, customers, materials, and safety conditions rarely behave like textbook examples.
AI-enabled tools usually change how trade work is diagnosed, documented, estimated, and checked more than whether a person is needed on site. Diagnostic software can suggest likely faults. Sensors can reveal system behavior. Estimating tools can support pricing. Digital checklists can help with compliance. Building systems can generate data a technician must interpret. Yet the worker still has to verify conditions, protect people, use tools safely, follow code, and decide what to do when the real situation does not match the easy answer. Human responsibility stays close to the work because the risk is physical.
To coach a trades decision well, families can ask about safety training before a trainee touches equipment. How much time is spent in hands-on work compared with classroom instruction? Who supervises the trainee? How competencies are assessed? What credential or license the pathway leads to? How portable that credential is across employers or regions? And what happens when equipment changes and skills need refreshing? The direct-to-work pathway also deserves seriousness. It can be strong when it builds transferable skill, wages, supervision,
and evidence of progress. It can be weak when a teenager enters low-skill work with no training structure, no mentor, no assessment, and no next step. Direct-to-work should not mean drifting into the first available job and hoping maturity solves the rest. It should mean choosing an entry point that teaches something portable.
Good options can include paid apprenticeships, employer training programs, co-op roles, structured entry-level positions in operations or customer service, health support roles, manufacturing training programs, information technology support routes, and creative or technical roles where portfolio progression is realistic. The key question is whether the learning design is real. Does the role build communication, documentation, reliability, customer understanding, data habits, equipment familiarity, or process awareness? Is there regular feedback? Is there a supervisor who teaches? Is there a next credential, assessment, or internal promotion path?
Skill verification matters more in direct-to-work because a degree may not serve as a broad signal. The teen needs evidence. That might include a supervisor evaluation, a completed training module with assessment, a portfolio of work, a safety certification, a customer service record, a documented project, or a work sample that shows performance under real constraints. Without visible proof, a teenager can spend a year gaining experience the next employer struggles to evaluate. Families can coach this path by asking what skills will be built in the first 3 months, the next 6 months, and the first year, how mentorship is structured, who gives feedback, which work products or assessments show growth, what credential or portfolio evidence can carry forward, and when the family will recheck whether the role is still building capacity.
The next month does not require a grand theory. It requires discipline. Families can start by gathering labor market signals from official occupational outlooks, local job postings, program outcome records, apprenticeship standards, licensing requirements, and regional economic information. Then compare each option using the same criteria. How adaptable are the skills? How portable are they across employers and industries? How quickly do the tools change? Does the pathway include real work experience? How vulnerable is it to local economic swings? And how well does it fit the teen's realistic learning curve?
No single signal should decide the choice by itself. A good plan comes from converging evidence. Then families can validate what employers hire for now. Job postings are imperfect, but they become more useful when patterns are compared across several employers instead of treating one listing as destiny. If the same field repeatedly asks for documentation, customer communication, safety training, data tools, portfolio evidence, or a particular credential, that pattern deserves attention. Families can also ask programs and coordinators to describe the tools students touch, the tasks students practice, the feedback they receive, and the standards they must meet. Employers can be asked what a beginner really does in the first months, not only what the job title suggests, so assumption can be replaced by evidence.
Return on investment should also be checked with realism. That includes total cost, likely time to completion, completion rates where available, work outcomes, debt burden, early earnings, and longer run mobility. Prestige and starting pay should not decide the case on their own. A less glamorous path with strong completion, low debt pressure, real work experience, and portable skills may be more resilient than a more prestigious path with weaker outcomes and heavier uncertainty. At the first point where a major education loan decision could be involved, families can keep the decision neutral and evidence-based by reviewing official aid and tuition information and their own circumstances, since eligibility and costs vary. That shifts the conversation from fear to records.
By the end of the first month, a family can usually build a short comparison rather than a final life plan. One option might be a college route with a major, an applied minor, and a required internship.
Another might be a trade apprenticeship with clear safety training and credential steps. A third might be a direct-to-work role with structured employer training and a planned credential or assessment after the first stretch of time. The useful result is not certainty. It is a small set of options that can be tested against evidence.
The rechecking plan matters because it prevents locking in too early. A natural checkpoint comes at the end of each semester or training term, after a summer job, internship, apprenticeship rotation, credential exam, or the first 6 months in direct to work, and before any major decision point that changes cost or commitments. At each checkpoint, families can compare progress against task evidence. Is the team producing better work than a few months earlier? Is feedback getting more specific? Are assessments being passed for reasons that show capability, not merely for speed? Does the teen understand daily tasks more clearly? Are local employers asking for skills the pathway does not teach? Is motivation dropping because the field is a poor fit, or because the teen is working through a teachable skill gap that can be supported? A helpful recheck is not panic at difficulty. It is evidence-based adjustment based on whether the difficulty reflects useful learning or real mismatch. Evidence should be concrete enough to inspect. A college student might bring a graded project, a lab report, a portfolio piece, supervisor feedback, or a revised paper. An apprentice might bring competency records, safety assessments, service documentation, or supervisor feedback. A direct-to-work teen might bring a training result, customer metrics where appropriate, a work sample, a project note, or a short reflection on what tasks were learned and what remains difficult. The goal is not to turn family life into a performance review. It is to make progress visible enough that better decisions follow.
Conversations with teens can get tense when the question is too heavy. Asking what they are going to do with their life can sound like a demand for one perfect answer at the exact moment work is changing. The conversation improves when it becomes testing, not prediction. Instead of asking which job will still exist, families can ask which skills travel if the job changes. Instead of asking which major sounds impressive, families can ask what the teen will be able to do and show after 1 year. Instead of asking whether AI will replace a field, families can ask which tasks in that field are routine, which require judgment, and which depend on human trust or physical reality. Then comes the most useful question of all. How will the family know if this plan still fits?
That question lowers conflict because it gives revision a place in the plan. A teenager may discover that a desired field is more solitary, more social, more physical, more mathematical, more repetitive, or more regulated than expected. If that discovery happens after a course, a summer job, or an early work placement, it has still done useful work. It saves time and redirects effort before the next major commitment. Families may also discover that a program with an attractive name has weak employer connections, or that a less celebrated pathway produces stronger evidence and a better fit. That is not failure. It is why checking matters.
The central coaching role is not controlling every choice. It is building a habit of evidence. What the teen tried, what the teen produced, what feedback came back, which tasks created energy, which tasks created resistance, which skills improved, which requirements surprised everyone. Over time, those observations tend to become more useful than broad anxiety about AI or inherited assumptions about prestige.
The argument comes back to the same distinction that started the book. AI changes tasks faster than job titles. Career planning should not depend on guessing one safe occupation and defending it against every new headline. It should depend on building adaptable skill, choosing pathways that produce visible work evidence, checking return and risk honestly, and revisiting the plan as the teen learns and the labor market shifts.
college can be resilient when it builds foundations, produces work evidence, connects to employers, and keeps cost aligned with outcomes. Trades can be resilient when they combine supervised practice, safety discipline, credential progression, and diagnostic judgment. Direct-to-work can be resilient when it is structured, mentored, assessed, and connected to portable skill. None of these paths is automatically superior. Each becomes stronger or weaker through its design.
The practical process stays repeating. Gather evidence, map skills to tasks, score resilience, choose the next step, and recheck before the next major commitment.
The next step turns these scenario-tested criteria into a concrete, step-by-step plan families can run over the coming weeks. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.